All righty, what's going on, everybody? Happy Thursday. We're back. We're back. The boys are back. It's been a few weeks since we've been live, but I'm excited to hang out with Stefan this morning. Am I pronouncing your name right, by the way? Stefan,
it's okay.
Is it Stefan?
So originally it's Stefan, but I got so used to both. I'm like, it's okay.
Stefan, okay. Anyways, excited to hang out with you, man. Whatever your name is, I'm excited to hang out.
Likewise, man. It's good to see you. Good to see you. You look tan from the vacation.
Yes. Yeah. Italy. There's a lot of sun in Italy, and the sun is always undefeated, especially when you don't wear sunscreen. So, yeah, for those of you tuning in and are wondering what this is, because we've been off for a few weeks. So Unicorn Finders was stemmed out of the fact that Jake, Dan, and I actually like each other outside of work. And we want an excuse to hang out during COVID together because we didn't know when we'd be back. Three and a half years later, we're still at this thing. And we focus on bringing on founders, doing really cool shit. The unofficial slogan is bring on founders doing really cool shit that you probably haven't heard of yet. So, yeah. And today is just like that. So, that being said, Stefan, whatever your name is, give a quick background about yourself, buddy, and a little bit about WonderGraph.
Awesome. Thank you for the introduction. So my name is Stefan. I'm the co-founder and the head of growth at WonderGraph. WonderGraph is a API composition platform. I'm not a big fan of the word platform because it's harder to adopt, but we are open source, so it makes it a little bit easier. So we're an end-to-end solution to create, manage, and host all your data integrations. So think Zapier, but for developers. With code-first approaches, it makes integrating everything much easier into your application. Background about me, I started off as a professional soccer player. A lot of people don't know this.
So I did not know that.
What?
Yeah. So I started in college. I played 4 years, full scholarship, and I signed for Orlando City on a homegrown contract. What? Yeah, I know, but it gets worse. Okay. 6 months in, guy sideswipes me into preseason, and I tear my ligament. I tear an ACL.
Right? Mm. Damn.
So you know that uncle at like every holiday party that's like, oh, I was a professional, but my busted knee, that's me.
That's me. Do you play pickup at all? Like, do you just go out there and just actually school kids?
So I talk with this like with my friends. So like I'll go out there and like it's not fun because you know you just annihilate these people, and then I was doing it, and they get mad, and I got hit again, and the guy tore my other ACL. So I'm that uncle.
Oh my god,
are you serious?
Yeah. So now I golf and I just play tennis. I'm much more
like. Heck yeah.
I love it.
Oh my gosh. Many people don't know this about Taylor, but he was a studio musician as a drummer. And I'm going to air your laundry before you got all started on all this stuff. So then he turned and here's what happened. So.
Yeah, I did not.
Yeah, tore his ACL drumming.
I didn't want to be broke on the side of a road playing till 3 a.m. at bars. So.
Still impressive, and I see you play hockey though. Like hockey's probably one of the hardest sports there is.
Yeah, play a lot of hockey. Our team's pretty decent, so yeah. But I definitely get beat up there. But that's my own fault. So, well, man, let's so talk about. We always like a good OG story, origin story. What was kind of the idea behind this, and what made y'all execute on this idea?
Yeah, so I actually really like our OG story. So. After college, after I tore my ACL, I didn't know what to do. And so I started working for a startup. And this startup was built by 5-time founders. So they've sold 4 companies before this fifth one. The fifth one's on Series C. And we were talking, me and the guy at the holiday party. And we really hit it off, the CEO. And I was like, I really like what you built and everything. And I don't know if he was drunk or something, but he told me, you have 2 weeks to quit. And I was like, why? He's like, you're in the wrong position. You're not a data analyst. You need to go and start your own thing. He's like, I see myself a lot in you. And I was like, okay, this guy's definitely wasted, whatever. So I go back to work after the New Year's, and 2 weeks later, I get fired. And my management's like, it came from upstairs. I was like, what? So I walk into his office, and he's like, listen, go figure something out. Text me. You have my number, but you can't work here. And I'm like, this is my first job. Like, what a douche. I was getting paid nicely as a data analyst, whatever. And so I'm upset. And then COVID hits. Like, COVID hit right after I got fired. So I got fired January. COVID hits March 2020. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. I moved to Miami, and I work for literally the worst startup I've ever seen. So it was the best learning experience because it's like, here's everything you should not do in a startup, and let me show it to you. And so I worked there for a year. And the whole time I'm doing that, I'm on like Y Combinator. I'm reading about startups, and I'm like,
Yeah.
This guy sees in me. I don't know anything about startups. Like, let me learn about it. Like, I know about tech. I'm an engineer. And while I'm on there, I leave this job and I join another startup and I'm working there. And at the very same day I start that new job, I'm on Y Combinator, find a co-founder. And I match with this guy named Jens. He's this brilliant architect. He invented a piece of software that's used by Apple. He open sourced it. And me and him link up and we're like on Y Combinator, find a co-founder. And he's like, listen, do you want to work together? And I'm like, okay, I'll do the sales and marketing. You do the tech stuff. And so we're working on this together. And this is, by the way, part-time, but it wasn't really part-time. I was putting in 40 hours on my first job. And then I was putting in like another 30, 25, but really like sometimes 40 in this startup. Mm. And within 2 months, we signed an enterprise customer. Yeah, this is Jens. So this is my co-founder. And we signed an enterprise customer, and you know, me and Jens start assembling a team. We bring on Dustin, who's our co-founder and tech lead, Bjorn, who is our COO, and I always joke he handles the boring stuff, which is like legal, fundraising, all the stuff that you need. And we assemble this team, and then we start the fundraising process. We have the four co-founders, and I thought it was going to be a lot harder, but Jens and Bjorn, they absolutely killed it, and we got a term sheet within 2 months. We raised $3 million,
wow.
And we've been growing ever since. And I met him totally by chance. He was my first match on Y Combinator, find a co-founder.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Wait, did they have like a Tinder app?
Here too. Damn.
Exactly. Yeah. The best way you can describe it. It's Tinder, but for finding a co-founder.
That's so good. Hmm. Listen, did you guys also go through Y Combo at any point at all?
No. So we didn't. And we actually never met in person till we raised the funding and met a year later.
Wow. So how did you guys do that? Talk to us about building that business, right? Because that's a lot of money. Seriously. People don't just, I know a lot of times people talk about these, you know, $100 million term sheets and everything else for these massive unicorns and everything else. But being involved in the startup space, getting even $1 million, getting $3 million is very, very hard. You guys are doing this completely remote. You guys don't work, you know, hand in hand together, you know, in person. How did you guys go about building this company, getting on the same page, working through personality differences, work differences? How did you guys do that to a point where in just a few short months, you're able to create a business that somebody says, hey, here's three sheets worth of money to give you?
Yeah. So fantastic question. And like when we first started out, like I met Jens, he was this guy in Germany. He's older than me. And me and him like talked. And at the beginning, he told me like, listen, like, if you want to do this, we have to do it 100%. I'll give 100%. You have to give 100%. And there was no like napkin on a term sheet. It was, if we raise money, you know, we'll share the equity and whatever. But from some reason, I trusted him and he trusted me. And so in the beginning, the most important thing was trust. And I was a little weary because, you know, like I've seen stories where people, you know, they screw whatever and all that. But I talked to my dad about it. My dad's like, listen, like worst thing, he screws you and you find out he's a bad person. Or best thing, he's a really good person. You guys create a beautiful company together and you live out your wildest dreams. So he's like, just take that risk. Who cares? He goes, at the end of the day, there's going to be people that screw you all your life. And he's like, you need to find out whether it's them or it's not. And so I was like, you know what? You're totally right. So I went in and me and Jens were like, we're going to trust each other. I'm going to work together. And he said this thing. He's like, you're probably going to talk to me more than you talk to your girlfriend, which is my fiance now. And he's totally right. We talk every day. We're on WhatsApp. And you would think the cultural difference from him being German, me being American is different, but it actually works out way better because he's very blunt and he will say what is wrong. And I love that because there's no beating around the bush, you know, like Miami flair behind it where it's like, oh, can you say that a little nicer? It's like, no, we need to fix this and we need to do this now. And so our relationship works great. And then we have Dustin, who is a machine. Like you put him in front of a computer and you give him a little idea. He goes and he's just cranking out code. And then Bjorn, he's also very friendly and very good. And just us four kind of created this company. We got the term sheet and we were like, we need to meet in person. And so when you meet somebody in person, it's so weird because on Zoom, you never know how tall they are. So when I met Taylor for the first time, I was like, whoa, this guy's tall. Like, you know,
everybody thinks I'm fucking short. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
Your video persona is very tiny.
Exactly. So you meet these people and like you meet Dustin and Dustin's a bodybuilder, but you wouldn't know. You would just think he's kind of big, but then you're like, whoa, this guy's jacked. And then you meet Jens and Jens is very tall. And then like we got a couple beers and it's like everything we've been talking about for the whole year, like it's just even better in person. And so now we meet every 4 months. And like, honestly, like they're already invited to my wedding. Like these guys are like close to my best friends because of how close we've gotten. And then when it goes to building the team, culture is who you hire, who you fire, and who you promote. And some really successful guy told me that here in Miami, and I never stopped thinking about it. And that's the exact culture that we implement with here. So we're fully remote. We have people in India. We have people in Ukraine. We have people in Poland and Spain and Germany. And we're fully remote. And our culture is just work really hard. Take vacation when you want to and love what you do. But don't come to work if you hate what you're working on right now. And if you're burnt out, go take 2 weeks off and relax. But I want you to come back and I want you to be excited about WonderGraph. And the biggest thing about us is we're fully transparent. Every deal, every failed deal, everything that we, you know, ups and downs, we share with the whole team because they're all a part of this journey.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Man.
All right. So go ahead, Jake.
You go, buddy.
No, you were going to say something profound.
This is fun. Y'all keep doing this.
Thanks, Taylor. So talk to us a little bit about the ideation of the project. You said you got an enterprise customer soon. Obviously, you got a lot of money pretty quickly. What are you guys ultimately trying to grow the business to do? How does this grow from, you know, this big open source project API, you know, tool into, you know, a big bustling business that I'm sure your investors are going to want to make, you know, some big money on it, as well as you guys do, but how do you guys grow and scale this business and what does that mean for the business moving forward?
Yeah. So great question. With enterprise, it's very tricky and you probably have experience with this when you've talked with other engineers or other founders. Enterprise deals can take months. And so right now we're talking to one of the biggest enterprises and we're almost at the finish line, but we started talking to them back in April and it's like, that's how long it can take. So with WonderGraph, what's beautiful about it is any enterprise, whether they're big or small, they have a list of vendors that they can work with. And if it has a weird license like BSL or, you know, Elastic or something, they have to run it by legal. And as soon as you have to run something by legal, it's a pain in the ass for your product because that's when it stops you right there. WonderGraph is Apache 2.0. So fully open source, the developers can integrate it right away. They can look into the code and it's no problem. So we have this amazing bottom-up motion where developers will try it out into their organization. They'll try it out over a weekend. They'll test it out and they'll be like, wow, I just integrated 5 data sources into my application. This is amazing. Now imagine that at a global scale with an enterprise that has 5,000 internal APIs and they're using an open source tool to do that. And it's like, okay, they're using WonderGraph. We do have some enterprises that use us and they don't pay a cent. And that's totally okay because that's the business of open source. You know, 90% of them won't pay you, but that 10%, they'll get an extra value on top of that, which is our second product, which is Cosmo. So Cosmo is also open source. But we offer a very generous pricing of $10 per 1 million requests. And it's this whole end-to-end solution with metrics, analytics. And the best part about Cosmo is that it allows you to see everything within your integrations on your GraphQL federation, as well your supergraph and your subgraphs. And so enterprises are obsessed with metrics. They need to know everything that's going on. They need to know tracing. They need to see how if something's too slow, if something's too fast, how many caching requests they have. And so with the enterprises, they love that. And since the core product itself is open source, it also gives them a release lever that if, you know, a competitor that we have decides to go around and they start raising prices on these people and they start running to us, which we'll never do. But they, if we ever decided to do that for in some alternate universe, it's an escape lever because it's open source. I can just host it all myself. I don't need you guys. And so enterprises love that. So we give them the freedom to host it themselves and they can get support. Or we give them the freedom that we manage it and we'll take care of everything, you know, the infrastructure and all the costs. They also have the escape lever.
You're basically the Red Hat model, right? You're stabilizing an open source project and you're selling a service to a wrapper around.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what Remix was doing too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting. I mean, I think, you know, I'm not techie, even though I try to be. Shut up, Dan. But basically, trying to make money off of open source is just hard for me to wrap my mind around. And so what you're saying is essentially you're just supporting something to give it more structure of something that's already there, which, and this is more of a bigger conversation around open source software, but is that essentially kind of what that is, monetizing open source software is giving it kind of a support system and an ecosystem for individuals to build off of that wasn't there previously?
Exactly. So I fought with this a lot from Dax. So you remember Dax from
You guys are like hilarious on Twitter.
So he's my neighbor and he's a really good.
Is he really your neighbor?
Well, kind of. So he's in Coconut Grove and I'm in Brickell, but it's like 10 minutes apart. And we like, we hang out on the weekends. And I saw him like 2 days ago. And so we were hanging out.
You guys go to Club Space together? Yeah.
Well, he actually roasts me for going to Club Space. Like, he'll see that I'm at Club Space.
He roasts everybody. He's hilarious. Yeah.
Good for you, man.
If you know him personally, it's even worse. But he'll text me when I'm at Space. He's like, I see you're at Space. Your company's going to fail. Any founder that goes to Space, their company fails. And it's like, you know, you're a couple drinks in and he starts messing with you. So, but, we talk about open source a lot. And so open source, 99 or 90% of people will not pay you. That's the nature of the beast, is that open source software, they think it's free. And the best way I can explain this is, have you ever used WinRAR, you know, to open zip files?
Yeah.
Did you ever pay for it?
Hell no.
Nobody ever paid for it. But it was useful, right?
Yeah, dude. What a blast from the past. Yeah.
Amazing application. So people won't pay for it. But the way you can make money on top of open source is you have a great product. But enterprises will need certain stuff. They'll need SSO. They'll need detailed analytics. They'll need some hosting options. Those are behind the paywall. Except with our offering, we put them in a managed solution, or you can host it on-prem. But come with me. I'll put you on a 30-minute call, and I will show you how many applications you have to spin up to self-host it yourself. By the time they get to the 30-minute mark, they're like, we'll just go for the managed solution. No problem.
Yeah.
And so that's how you can make money with open source.
Mm. So then how do you, from a value perspective, show to future investors to be able to say, this is like our run rate over time when you have that ripcord? What does that look like? And do you put a heavier emphasis on customer success as your retention policy, as opposed to leaning on the contracts that would allow, that would keep them stickier longer? Or what does that look like?
So great question. We actually say this a lot in sales calls. Like, they'll be like, oh, like you're a smaller startup. And we say, we know, but it's not about the size. For us, it's the customer success. So if I can make you successful in the long run, my company will ultimately be successful. And the way we retain customers is we'll do with like Cosmo, a paid POC for 3 months, you know, a very, very discounted rate. And they'll see the value of it because it's just, they're seeing analytics, they're integrating everything. They're giving developers time back to work on business problems rather than integrating solutions or setting up their own infrastructure. And from there, after 3 months, we do a year contract paid 3 months quarterly. So for example, we met with a company that's a customer now, Soundtrack Your Brand. They're basically Spotify for businesses. Fantastic engineer. Met with them last week. This week, they signed a year contract already with us after 1 week of using Cosmo. And so for us, they see the value proposition. They see the value. And then investors can see that we can commit these large organizations for a year. They can see a repeatable business cycle. And from that, they can see, you know, a Series A, a Series B, all the way up to, you know, like a Red Hat IPO.
Well, congratulations on finding that product market fit too, especially in such a tight market for new, really new ideas, you know, in there. That's absolutely awesome to be able to articulate it like that. What was the first, what was the pitch like? Because I assume you got your funding pre-revenue, right? And so what, what did that look like? Like, how did, can you give us like a 60 second on just that process? And like, you know, cause we have a lot of founders that listen in and stuff too, and just, or would be, or trying to, you know, get to that level. How do you kind of like make that point quickly? Much unlike what I'm doing in this question.
No, it's a good point, but so two things. We're not product market fit yet. Like I think we're heading towards the right way. But the best way, and you probably can relate to this, is like product market fit is when everything around you is burning. And, you know, things are breaking, customers are feeding. But as you're doing that, money keeps filing in because you're solving such a huge problem. So the day that comes, I cannot wait. But I'm also terrified for that day because we're slowly, I think, heading towards that. And then the second thing. So as a company, you have to be malleable because it's very, you know, things are changing. The market's changing. And so I talk to this a lot with Taylor, like 2023 is a terrible time for fundraising. Like I talk to VCs all the time and I ask them straight up, like, have you invested this year? And they'll be like, no. And I'm like, so why are you wasting my time if you know you're not going to invest at all? And so our pitch has changed dramatically over what we first pitched. So the 60 second pitch when we first started was, we have this open source solution. We were revenue. We were making like $2,000 a month from like a large enterprise. That was our one customer, but we had open source traction. So we pitched them. We're like, developers love us. Enterprises are using us. Enterprises are paying for us. and we are an end-to-end solution for API integration. Eventually, what we want to build is the GitHub for API. So where you store code, we want to do that for API. We already have the framework that allows you to install or integrate an API in seconds. So think NPM install Stripe, NPM install Twilio. But imagine that there was a place like GitHub where you can store that and share with other organizations as well as your internal organization. So internal organizations means I have 5,000 APIs. If I write one to do this problem, I should be able to easily share that same API with somebody that's on the DevOps team on my huge, you know, 50,000 person company. And so that was our pitch in the beginning.
Yeah, because you can easily get out of hand with API management as soon as you go down the microservices route in general, right? Especially if you have a bunch of 3PLs.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so is there also some where you're handling some level of the API documentation as well, or is it all automated enough that you don't even have to know that part when you're accessing it? What does that look like?
So great question. Like on the API part, we have, we generate a open API spec. We generate a Swagger document and we generate a Postman collection. So almost completely automated, like it completely self-documents itself. And then when you also use GraphQL, best thing about GraphQL, people will say it's self-documenting. So you can kind of use that as well. But yeah, it's self-documenting and kind of automated.
That's cool. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, it's great. Keep going.
And then from the reporting analytics piece, what are you capturing in that right now?
And I love the tech talk, but we capture everything. So we use Prometheus and we use OTel, and then you can connect integrations with there with Datadog. And so we can see all requests. We can see batch requests. We can see post everything. And then we can see, you know, like latency. We can see any errors. So anything inside of your API, we can give you a full health check on what's going on within your API, errors or anything like that.
And you can do that for third-party APIs as well, not just internal constructed, right?
Exactly, yeah. So if they're using like Cosmo and they have a super graph and they are exposing that to third parties, we can kind of see the entire thing and give them health checks on it.
That's awesome. So kind of pivoting towards the last few minutes we have here, what's been kind of, what does the future look like? Any fundraising, just want to see if there's anything exciting on the horizon for you guys.
Yeah. So, like I said, we launched this product, WonderGraph Cosmo, and WonderGraph Cosmo is a drop-in replacement for Apollo Graph OS. And we launched it and we had it kind of done. We just never marketed it. But we launched it and we've been signing up customers like left and right. And it, honestly, the feedback we've gotten from the customers is amazing. They love it. So what we want to do is focus 90% on Cosmo. You know, this is bringing in revenue. People love it and just keep driving that and getting to a point of profitability. With what's going on with 2023, what I've been talking to a lot of investors on is it's kind of sad, but they're waiting for a lot of startups to die because
there's
a lot of AI startups that do a lot of the similar things, but in the end, there will only be one winner because the other nine ran out of funding. And so what we want to do is we're staying very conservative. We're focusing completely on revenue. We're focusing on complete open source adoption and focusing on adoption of Cosmo, increase much revenue as we can, and then stay alive. And then when we get to the point that we need a Series A, we'll raise for a Series A. And so we'll do that when, you know, the market turns. But till then, we just want to completely focus on profitability and kind of getting to that point. And if we don't even need a Series A, I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that. And we're going to keep going the company based on revenue.
Yeah, what? Imagine building a business that's actually a business, right? Talk to us about when you're talking to customers or potential clients of yours, what's been their reception? Is this something that they felt like was a gap in the marketplace? I know you guys are attacking some different things. I was reading about your JSON calls instead of your HTTP stuff and
There you go, Dan.
Yeah, how about that? I did a little bit of research even, right? But what are customers saying when you're coming to approach a problem? Is this a problem that they didn't know really existed, or is this something that's kind of been plaguing the marketplace that you guys are trying to solve? But ultimately, talk to a little bit about that approach.
Yeah, so great question. One of the things we pride ourselves on
is three, baby.
We don't do any outbound sales. Absolutely none. So oh, wow. All of our leads and all of the customers you see on our wall, they've come to us. And the way we do that is we write really good blog posts and we write really good authoritative blog posts that say like,
oh, it's crazy. Hey, it's almost like content works.
Oh, geez.
Content 100% works. And people are like, damn, these people know their stuff. But what happened in the market is, especially in the GraphQL space, there is one leader. There is one giant corporation. And what they've done is they've taken open source software and they've made it not open source. And if you saw what happened with HashiCorp, if you do that, yep, people will be completely outraged. And so we were in the great position, God bless, that we have that same offering that you guys have, but completely open source. And so people are coming to us left and right, and they're being like, listen, like, they made it not open source. And second, they're also reaching out to me and being like, hey, Taylor, you were paying $80K last year. It's going to be $365 this year, and you have till this date to get onto the enterprise plan. So you go do that to somebody, they're going to be like, okay, I need to find an alternative stat. And so people are coming to us like crazy from Apollo. Wow. They're joining us instead. And we offer an open source alternative with very manageable hosting costs, with very good support packages. And the best part is, if you schedule a call, you will get an engineer and you will get a founder on a call every single time. So there is no BS. And we go straight from, what is your problem? Okay, how can we help? We're here to help. We're not selling you anything. Okay, you sound like a good fit. Here, let's get you in a Slack connect. Let's totally talk. And then from there, they get this whole red carpet, you know, how can we be the best solution and save your day? Because you have a month to decide to go from $80K to $365K in 1 year.
So from that, I mean, I love the intent of all of that. I think it's just absolutely great in how we hope to do everything. If you get to that, to your version of ideal market fit, how do you kind of guarantee, or what's your plan for scaling that level of service? And is it, and how necessary is it for scale? You know, if you get to that point, what does that look like?
Yeah. And so for us, it's truly important that the quality of service is important. And like our team, they are the most receptive people I've ever seen. Like you ask a question in the Discord and they answer within seconds. And so right now it's manageable, but some companies that do it really well is they're completely customer focused. And so for us, I want to keep that as we scale. And if there's a way that we can do it, the best way we can do it is through community. And so, you know, you have a community when people ask a question and nobody from your team answers, but somebody else in the community answers.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so what we want to build is this amazing GraphQL ecosystem, which is what we're doing. We reached out to people that used to be our competitors and we're like, hey, listen, we're open sourcing everything. You do edge caching best, like Graphbase, or you do security good like this one. Let's partner together and you do what you do best and we'll do what we do best, because at the end of the day, the GraphQL ecosystem gets better rather than there's all these, you know, vendors that don't like each other. So we want to keep that level of customer success through community. So you have a question, the community is there to help out.
There you go.
Awesome.
All right, boys, we got to wrap up.
Scott Lundgren has a question in the chat. I don't know if you want to answer that real quick.
So are you saying that you're headed towards becoming an API marketplace if you're looking to become the GitHub for APIs? If so, what has it been like working directly with third-party companies that are running the endpoints your customers looking for integrate with?
Yeah. So great question. Yeah, eventually I guess we want to become a marketplace. I don't know if GitHub is like a marketplace, but it's just a place that you can share with private repositories as well as with public. So you can create, you know, you can publish your code up to there and you can, you know, your software, and they can easily clone it and start it. So we kind of want to become the GitHub for APIs, but I don't know if marketplace is the right word. And to work directly with third-party companies that are running endpoints to your customers, it's very easy to do with WonderGraph, because you can take selections of like their supergraph that they want to make into an API, and they can expose it directly using JSON RPC with WonderGraph. So working directly with them, it's been a blast, but the grand mission is to get as many people as we can onto the platform, because the more graphs that we have and the more APIs that we have, the easier it is to create that marketplace. That's a good question, though.
Sweet. Cool. All right, friends, I got a hard stop here in 1 minute. I got to hop on another call. I appreciate you all. Stefan, Steven.
Come on.
It was great hanging with you today. Love you to death. We'll talk soon.
Hey, I'll see you at space soon. I don't have tickets or anything, but no, I'll figure it out now that I know, now that I have a plug.
Yeah, I have guest list. Anytime you want to go, I got guest list.
See what I mean?
Hey, I'll fly down. If y'all are going, I'll fly down. It's a Southwest flight to Miami. I'm in.
Taylor, you
fly down. You're not sleeping.
No, Stefan, don't let him convince you. Taylor will be asleep before you think about getting ready to go out.
I won't. If y'all go out, I will come out.
If you guys go out by 6:30 and are back by 8:30, Taylor will be there.
Exactly. If you're out by 6:30 and no.
No.
Okay, how about this? How about this? Taylor, we do space brunch. So we wake up at 6 a.m., we get ready, we go to space at 7 a.m., prime DJ's on, we drink.
That sounds great.
And then we go to brunch.
That sounds great.
We're doing that.
All right, cool.
All right.
Good to meet you guys. Thank you guys so much.
Pleasure. Have a good one.
Bye.
Good luck.
Bye, guys.